Good morning. Welcome to Senate Finance. Today is Friday, March 31st, 2017. The time is 9:08 a.m. I'm Co-Chairman Anna McKinnon. With me this morning, Co-Chairman Hoffman.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Von Hoff.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Dunleavy.
Good morning.
Senator Olson.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Michicki.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Bishop is excused and away on other state business. Yesterday we heard Senate Bill 97, and there was general agreement to change the sponsorship of SB 97 from Senator McKinnon to Senate Finance. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the Senate Finance Committee approve the change of sponsorship for Senate Bill 97 from Senator McKinnon to the Senate Finance Committee.
Is there objection? Seeing and hearing none, that title is changed, and I'll make a motion on the Senate floor today to reflect that change. Two things on today's agenda, SB 55, the Omnibus Crime Corrections Bill, as well as SB 54, Crime and Sentencing. If I could draw members' attention to SB 55. We heard the bill on Tuesday and took public testimony and reviewed the fiscal notes. We do have one amendment. Could I ask someone to move my amendment?
I move amendment number one.
I'll object for purposes of discussion. Mr. Schilling, could you join us at the microphone? The sponsor of the bill requested the amendment. I bring it before you today on behalf of the sponsor. Mr. Schilling.
Madam Chair, this is Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill. Senate Bill 91 limited municipal authority to have greater punishments for similar state offenses than prescribed under state law. And this is a provision that resides in Senate Bill 54 that Senator Coghill requests be also placed in Senate Bill 55. It's viewed as a technical revision rather than a substantive revision, and just increases the likelihood that this will pass into law this session. It's a very important provision for the municipality. What it does is it clarifies that this limitation on municipal authority does not apply to non-criminal offenses.
Thank you, Mr. Schilling, and I believe we had testimony in this regard at our last hearing. Is there any questions on amendment number one? Seeing none, I'll remove my objection. Is there a further objection to adoption of amendment number one? Seeing and hearing none, amendment number one is adopted. The main bill is before us. It's a CS for Senate Bill 55, version N as amended. Discussion from committee members on the bill. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the Senate Finance Committee pass Senate Bill 55, version N, as amended from the Finance Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes to the next committee of referral.
Is there objection? Seeing and hearing none, the CS for Senate Bill number 55, Judiciary, /N, as amended, moves from committee. Brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. We're back on the record. This is Senate Finance. Now, the next bill before the body is Senate Bill 54, Crime and Sentencing. I'd like to invite Commissioner Williams to the microphone. There's a new fiscal note. We have covered some fiscal notes before, but we do have a new fiscal note.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Dean Williams. I'm the Commissioner for the Department of Corrections. Would you like me to sort of maybe give an overview of this new fiscal note and kind of where we stand, if that sounds right to you?
Commissioner, you and I met yesterday, and we talked about the magnitude and the implications of the bill before us,
right,
and the variability of some of the notes that you were trying to establish on behalf of the state.
Right.
And so if you could put that conversation on the record,
sure,
as to why the Senate is now seeing under SB 54 from the Department of Corrections, OMB Component 1381, an indeterminate fiscal note with a backup behind it for what you believe is your department's best guess,
right,
at the implications of changes to Senate Bill 54.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I realize this is a bit unusual to get three fiscal notes probably from our department. I've only been in this job a little over a year. I would gather this to be a little bit unusual, though, and I guess it probably you deserve all an explanation for that. So I really have had our department, as well as probably representatives of every department sitting behind me, ramped up for the last month trying to really hammer out what the implications, financial implications, would be under Senate Bill 54. And here's the ultimate problem. In spite of our good efforts, I'm not sure, in this, having been in this job a year, what an indeterminate fiscal note normally would look like, but I think what we have in front of us is exactly that. We're relying upon 2015 data with new assumptions, and we have no record of what that really looks like. So it's really, I've come to realize in this job that fiscal notes are many times art over science, but you're really trying to get a good best estimate of where you're at. I feel like the department really is in a guesstimate place, and I wish I could have arrived at this decision maybe a few weeks ago, probably save a little bit of heartburn for some people. But I really came to this conclusion before you today that really an indeterminate note is the right thing to do. It's the best thing to do because there are so many assumptions, and I'll just give you one, and I won't bore you with the complete details, but the C felony issue is one, for example. We're using 2015 data to say that we know this is how many people are first-time felons under for C felonies. There are new assumptions that were being put into play. We have a law that just changed, and so we don't know. We're seeing some lower reductions of it, but we don't have any. We don't have a firm standing on where that is at right now. And now we're making some new assumptions on top of it. It is a very, very wide range of where that could be. The truest was the same with the other aspects of the bill. So I'm not doing this I'm just doing it because, quite frankly, we can't give you a very good estimate, and it is more like a guesstimate. And I'm uncomfortable with sort of presenting that to all of you. And so I have, I firmly feel, too, by the way, the importance of the bill in terms of being accurate and credible is, it matters to me, and it matters, should matter to all of you. I'm firmly in support of some of the things that we're doing in here and the efforts behind it. Make no mistake. But in terms of the fiscal note, I think it is the most honest to say we just don't know. We have given you backup data about the ranges of some of that. I'd rather go on for another year, come back to you, and with the sort of unsavory aspect of a supplemental for the department, because to be honest, the department's budget is one I'm challenged with every day about making reductions and cuts, and so I don't really like supplementals. Probably you don't either, but I think that's the best way to approach it, because I think it's the most credible and the most honest, and so before you is hopefully the last fiscal note that we may present to you on it, and it's indeterminate because of that and some other factors I haven't necessarily detailed, but it's really because, to summarize, that when you have these many variables and new assumptions, we're really getting out there in terms of being able to give you a solid or even a marginally solid range. And so I initiated the effort to really take this to an indeterminate because I think it's the most honest and most makes the most sense to me, and hopefully it makes the most sense to you.
Commissioner, on the backup documents for clarity for the general public and those legislators that have interest, you've tried to provide the backup to the previous fiscal note and ranges that we spoke about yesterday.
Correct.
And so what I asked the commissioner to do, if we have so many variables, then how do we put goalposts out to understand the effects? And so the commissioner, working with his finance folks, have tried to put a range of in the variables to give us their best estimates as to what the impact would be. And what he's cautioning us on to highlight is this is an estimate, and they will do everything they can to keep the costs down as much as possible, but there is a chance that they would be back, given the constraints and the cuts from the previous year, when we started into this process, that they may have to ask for a supplemental next year. So I want to be clear that we were trying to be as transparent as possible, and the backup documents on this three-page fiscal gives you some of the challenges in giving you a fixed number to go forward with. So just if there's discussion on that, I'd welcome it so that the public understands that we are not trying to hide the ball, that the numbers are in our fiscal note. They are not on the front page because of the variability of the different issues that are moving forward. Are there questions from committee members? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I appreciate your, especially since you're in the front of the Finance Committee, your special attention being drawn to the budget. But obviously we as public policymakers are our primary mandate is to go ahead and make sure we have public safety out there, and that's foremost in our minds. But as I look at what's going on, at least what I'm seeing, and you're saying it's an estimate, it's a, you know, it's the best guesstimate, and I appreciate your efforts for that. But at least what I'm seeing happening here is that as much as a fifth of the savings that were projected last year are going to be taken back. In fact, the $4 million that were in the previous fiscal note are there. Is that the right conclusion that I'm drawing, that we're going down this direction where some of the savings that were put in place will be passed away if we pass this bill and don't stick with the original?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, you've touched on it exactly. Here's the, and I'll try to answer it as precisely as I can. Some of the changes in Senate Bill 54 are going to cost us more money. I mean, it just is. If, in fact, there is a understanding now, I think, though, within all departments, and because we are wrestling with each other about this, that we know that our hard beds are commodities. And so we're in a changing transition now of understanding. So I agree with you that we're going to lose some of the savings we had out of that. No doubt about it. But I think what we're wrestling with now, which is a good wrestle, is that we're trying to deal with some of the implications of why Senate Bill 54 is in front of us, with some of these sort of outrage and anger, and whether or not you agree or disagree with it. I think I definitely recognize that we have to address that as the commissioner. And so I'm on board with that because I think we have to address that. But we're going to continue to struggle as we adopt, even if you adopt some of the changes out of 54, about realizing that we're in a different, we have to do business differently. And so we are going to lose some of the savings, sir. But I think we're going to struggle to maintain as much of it as possible and make sure that we're not knee-jerk reaction to some of the things. I can assure you from my office, that's where I'm at. And I think I can speak for my colleagues as well.
Madam Chair, if I just...
Senator Olson.
Ask the question in a different way. I think the public wants to know that even though it is going to be more expensive, that indeed public safety will be enhanced in spite of what has been seen as some of the shortcomings in the previous S. Bill 91. Is that a correct assumption that the public can have?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I agree. I think there's a everything we all want. We want improved safety. So I'm with you that I think that it allows a few more tools in the toolbox to keep in line with the greater good.
No further questions, Madam Chair.
Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, this is a I'll try to get this concept out in a way that we can talk about it on the record. But I think your calculations in the previous fiscal note and even the way you're looking at it now are on a one-to-one, right? When you think about someone with a CFL name, you're looking at the 0 to 365. I think that tool allows the courts to spend a little bit more time separating the wheat from the chaff, which is the way I've kind of described this, right? I mean, I think for the lower level, those with a high probability of rehabilitation, you're going to see lower numbers or no time in your facilities at all. And I think often law enforcement and the courts sort of know someone that's likely to be a bad player in the future, and they try to intervene earlier, right? So the reason I talk about a one-to-one is I think I'm not sure that you in your analysis have given any credit for someone that may be an offender on a C felony level today, and with some intervention you could avoid a crime that results in many years in one of your facilities in the future. Have you given any credit to that?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, I would answer that that's in the contemplation all the time. I don't know how that comes out in the fiscal note, Senator, but there are things that we're doing. First of all, we haven't stood up the pretrial unit, which is to start next year. The whole point of that unit is to get people quickly out of the system who you're just talking about, Senator, who should not be going into the system further, who we can save for a job. So I'm still waiting for the entire package and entire strategy to come into play, because I think we're going to not only get savings there, but I think we're going to get diversion opportunities. The other thing I'll just quickly mention on your point is the Attorney General and I have already talked about a real diversion strategy that other states are using, and how we can leverage the pretrial unit, since we're kind of doing risk assessments, anyhow, is there a sector of that group you can go, you know what, they're kind of charged with a little bit more serious crimes, but it really is all drug-related, and if we get them on a different track, other states have found success in this area. It is not an area that we have ventured very far into, but we had a meeting about it a week or so ago with her number two, Rob Henderson. We're all on the same page that things are going to need to be done differently. And so the pretrial unit allows us to go down some of that road that you're considering that that's in my head all the time, every day.
Thank you.
Other questions on the fiscal note? Thank you, Commissioner Williams. I would like to read, based on in our fiscal note on page 2, based on calendar year 2015, offender data and future sentencing assumptions, the Department of Correction is projecting an increase to the inmate population of approximately 108 persons per day up to 253 persons per day. It's anticipated the legislation will increase the institutional expenditure by $1,635,536, that's for the 108 individuals, up to $3,831,394, that is for the 253 persons, annually, based on a daily marginal rate of $41.49. The fiscal note does go further into detail to support those numbers, but just so the public that's following understands the magnitude of what we're talking about, I just wanted to make sure that was on the record. If I could ask my staff, Julie Lucky, to the microphone, and we'll cover the other fiscal notes, and then we'll move into amendments.
Madam Chairman, members of the Senate Finance Committee, for the record, my name is Julie Lucky, staff to Senator Anna McKinnon. The new corrections fiscal note would replace existing fiscal note 4 in your packet. The other fiscal notes that came with the bill would still apply, and I'll just do a quick summary. These are all zero fiscal notes. There's a zero fiscal note from the Department of Public Safety. The appropriation is the Alaska State Troopers. The allocation is Alaska State Trooper Detachments, OMB Component Number 2325, again, a zero fiscal note. Existing fiscal note number 2, Department is Department of Law, Appropriation is the Criminal Division, Allocation is Criminal Justice Litigation, OMB Component Number 22020. Existing fiscal note number 3, Department is Department of Health and Social Services, Appropriation is Juvenile Justice, Allocation is Probation Services, OMB Component Number 21340. And finally, fiscal note number 5, Department is Judiciary, the Appropriation is Alaska Court System, Allocation is Trial Courts, OMB Component Number 7680.
Thank you, Ms. Lucky. Are there questions on the zero fiscal notes? Thank you, Ms. Lucky. With that, I'd like to take a brief at ease to pass out the amendments. Brief at ease. We're back on the record. We have Senate Bill 54 before us. It's version R from Judiciary. It's a CS. We have amendments. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I move amendment number one labeled R9.
I'll object for purposes of discussion. I would like to notify the committee of the people online available for questions. We've already heard from Commissioner of Corrections, Commissioner Williams. We have from the Division of Probation and Parole, Rebecca Brunger, as well as Carrie Belden. We also have Tony Piper from the ASAP Manager, Division of Behavioral Health. We have Jeff Edwards, the Director of the Parole Board, as well as Jerry Fox from the Department of Corrections. So if you'd like any of those individuals or perspectives to comment on your amendment, just let me know and we'll have them weigh in. Senator Von Imhoff, if you could explain your amendment, amendment number one.
Thank you. Madam Chair, this amendment inserts a new Section 18 into the bill. The language amends Alaska Statute 33.16.130, subsection C, which deals with scheduling of follow-up parole hearings following a denial of parole. So this amendment, it deletes the two-year scheduling provision from the statute. The previous language created some ambiguity regarding the timing of the parole hearings. And so by adopting this amendment, we reduce the ambiguity and give the scheduling discretion to the Board of Parole, who are experts in the area. So it allows them the discretion to 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, however many years that they feel is appropriate for that particular person. So I will stop at that point.
Thank you. Is there Jeff Edwards? Mr. Edwards, do you have any comments on amendment number one that we should consider?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Jeff Edwards. I'm the Executive Director for the Parole Board. A real policy decision for the committee to consider. The language, I do agree with the sponsor of the amendment that there is a little bit of ambiguity in the original language in SB 91. Current practice prior to SB 91 was we were really obligated to set a 10-year rule. And that's a court case law decision by the court system where we would, if parole was denied by the board, we really were obligated to convene the hearing within 10 years. And this language inserted by SB 91 in a roundabout way suggests that that should be limited to 2 years. So the board can make whatever policy decision we like and as we review the evidence and continue cases or deny cases. If this committee wants to put remove the two-year requirement, we're totally okay with that, and we can make it happen.
Are there questions of Mr. Edwards on the amendment? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Edwards, as you look at this amendment and seeing from a parole standpoint, what effect is that going to have on the parole status of incarcerates that are out in rural Alaska, who are going to be obviously subject to this amendment?
Through the Chair, Senator Olson, it allow really more flexibility for the board to make the decisions when we evaluate cases and look at the effects, particularly out in the rural areas where there's a large community effect for crimes. We bend over backwards. We try and include the victims in the crime, victims of the crime, in our hearing process. We like to hear what the community has to say. That weighs heavy on our decision-making process. And so those communities, especially the rural ones where it's small and everybody knows everybody's name and everybody knows that the crimes are committed, we involve those processes and we really allow the board members to dissect the community impacts of these crimes and make an informed, educated decision.
Senator Olson, follow-up?
No further question. I'm just interpreting that there's not going to have any negative effect on the people in my district.
Other questions? I'd like to invite the sponsor to the table, the representative from the sponsor. Mr. Schilling, Does Senator Coghill have comments on Amendment Number 1 for consideration by the committee?
For the record, Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill. He supports this amendment. That, as Jeff Edwards mentioned, it does clear up a little bit of ambiguity in the statute. Our office spoke with a number of attorneys yesterday, and the general consensus was that this was not a change in practice, and that even with this language, the decision to hold parole hearings is purely discretionary. However, because there is a touch of ambiguity in the statute, it made sense to just eliminate this language.
Thank you. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to be supporting this amendment. I think it's an important amendment for the I think it better meets the intention of Article 1, Section 12 and 24 for the rights of crime victims. If you think about the families, the victims and the families of victims for heinous and violent crimes, I mean, the way it was sitting is every 2 years they were going to have to live through that probation hearing again. And for in this case, it gives the rights back to the parole board so that someone that's unlikely to receive parole because of the nature of their crimes, I think it saves that experience for victims and the families of victims. So I'll be supporting it. Thank you.
Mr. Schilling, if you would remain at the table through the amendment process, unless we need the second seat, I would like to ask, we have representatives from the corrections, courts, Department of Law, and the public defender. From the perspective of any of the state agencies in the room or online, is there information that we can should consider in evaluating Amendment Number 1? No one is rising. With that, I'll remove my objection to Amendment Number 1. Is there further objection on Amendment Number 1? Seeing and hearing none, Amendment Number 1 is adopted. Amendment Number 2, Senator Machicki.
I move Amendment Amendment Number 2, Madam Chair.
I object for purposes of discussion. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the reasons I supported Senate Bill 91 was because I'll keep saying a better way of separating the wheat from the chaff. And we had a report the other day that with the combination of controlled substance adverse effects in our state, it costs the state in many different ways. One of them is approximately $3 billion between controlled substance and alcohol abuse in our state. Not all of it related to crime, but much of it related to crime. What this amendment does, and it has a zero fiscal note, but is it requires folks to go through the ASAP program when they're arrested for misconduct involving a controlled substance.
Senator Machicki, could you define what ASAP is?
Yes, it's actual acronym. It's the alcohol.
Mr. Jordan.
Safety Action Program. Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
So what this amendment would do is right now for current punishment for simple possession of controlled substances, not selling, but controlled possession, is suspended imprisonment of up to 30 days for the first offense, up to 180 days for the second offense, and third and subsequent convictions up to 1 year. But it's suspended imprisonment. This amendment requires that they pay a fine to enter the ASAP program. It's $100 for youth, $200 for adults. The fee is in the regulation. The ASAP case manager evaluates the person and recommends either a treatment or educational program. There's no requirement for even a plan for treatment currently under Senate Bill 91. And if we're going to turn the lives around of those that are in simple possession of controlled substances, some of them very serious substances, Madam Chair, we at least have to put them before someone who's going to help them find the treatment they need and not just hope for the best. This allows that to occur. We've talked to Tony Piper, the ASAP program manager. He's told us that the program can absorb the level of MICS, the misconduct involving a controlled substances offenders, without having a fiscal note. And I believe without it, you're simply waiting for a more serious crime to occur without treatment. And this allows a treatment plan to be formulated.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Are there questions on the structure of the amendment? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Machicki, where are the fee schedules that you referred to in your comments?
It's already in section 1171.
In regulations, Senator Machiko?
Yes, it's in one brief addies, Madam Chair.
Brief addies. Back on the record?
Yes, the fee schedule is in regulation, Senator Hoffman, and there's a sliding payment scale for people, and the case manager would work with the offenders to get them in the appropriate program. So if they can't afford the fees, there's a sliding scale for those individuals.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Mr. Schilling, could you give the sponsors thoughts on amendment number 2?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Coghill does not oppose this amendment. It certainly does not conflict with the intent of the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission's recommendations or last year's Senate Bill 91. And as Senator Machiko stated, this simply provides an additional tool to screen and refer individuals with substance abuse issues to the ASAP program.
Thank you, Mr. Schilling. And just to highlight the conversation, when we talk about criminal justice reform that happened in the past legislative session, it was under the title in the 29th legislature of SB 91. We do have an SB 91 that passed this year, which is why we continue to try to make clarification that dealt with opioids. So if the general public is trying to search for a document that's being referred to, that that actually passed in the 29th legislature. I would like to go to Mr. Tony Piper. He's the manager of the ASAP program, Division of Behavioral Health. Mr. Piper, are you online?
Yes, Madam Chair.
If you could identify yourself for the record.
My name is Tony Piper, and I am the Alcohol Safety Action Program Manager for the Division of Behavioral Health.
Mr. Piper, Senator Machiko advised the committee that there would be a zero fiscal note. Could you speak to the amendment and the fiscal note?
Yes, I can. So we looked at the amount of people that would be added to the system at this point, and it was a small enough number that with the staffing that we currently have, the added fees that people would be paying to the grantee ASAP offices would help offset any cost at this point that may incur because of the added participation in the ASAP program. So I think that would offset, that would help us to survive this added few people that would come through.
Are there questions from committee members? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Piper, since you're the director of the program, with a zero fiscal note, I'm assuming that whoever is involved in the program are paying at least part of the costs that are there?
Through the chair, Senator, yes, that is correct.
With those people that are being incarcerated, they're from a lower income families and tend to be that part of society that aren't well, do not have large bank accounts. How do you expect them to go ahead and pay, especially out in rural Alaska?
Many people are able to pay the fee. It's a $200 fee at this time. But we provide the service regardless of if you can pay the fee or not. So you're going to get the ASAP service, and that's required by our offices to do that.
Senator Olson, follow up.
And where do you have these programs at throughout the state?
The ASAP offices are located in 13 different areas, and I can name them off for you if you want me to.
Well, as long as you got the numbers there, Mr. Piper, 13 is fine. My question has to do with who pays for the transportation. If you have somebody from out in Shungnak or Narvik, for that matter, how do they get to these sites that have the program in place for them to go and attend?
So if there is no ASAP office in the area and there is no treatment office, occasionally we will use a treatment office to do the ASAP monitoring for us. If that's all that's in the area, but you're only required to be at an ASAP office if you have access to one.
So if it's required, if somebody's out in one of the smaller communities, or in Diomede for that matter, how do they How do they get to there?
They would seek help with the treatment agency that's closest to them if they could. And there are some opportunities for distance education and some treatment that's done over the Internet. But for people who don't have access to the agencies at all, the judges usually do not require them to do that.
Senator Olson?
That's not the way I'm reading the amendment, though, Mr. Piper. I'm reading the amendment that it's required for them to go through, and I kind of tend to agree that that would be a certainly something that would there. My main question has to do with who pays for the transportation for them to go to a facility where we're paying, where the price of transportation is so expensive out in the district that I represent.
Through the chair, I would agree, Senator, but that's not one of the functions of the ASAP office. So people that have to go in can go in. The Anchorage ASAP office will also reach out and monitor people by distance to make sure that they are at least monitored if there's a treatment agency that they can access. And if there is no treatment agency, there are some opportunities to do some distance treatment as well.
Mr. Piper, you're well aware that Internet service out in rural Alaska is at best only available at the school and sometimes at the health clinic.
Through the chair, yes, Senator, we are aware of that.
Senator Olson, Senator Machicki would like to comment on the issue, I believe, that you're raising. Senator Machicki?
So two things. It doesn't actually require that. Right now, ASAP cannot be used for misconduct involving a controlled substance, but it is used for the same alcohol-related problems in your district, and they receive distance services, if you will, if they can't arrive at an ASAP office. So it's widely used for alcohol today, and this just allows, it doesn't require, it allows it to be used for misconduct involving a controlled substance, which currently is not allowed in the system.
Madam Chair, is it possible to have the director have the Commissioner of Corrections come up and comment on it?
Commissioner Williams, do you have additional information to provide the committee on the subject raised by Senator Olson?
Madam Chair, I'm a little unfamiliar with this area, and I'm not sure what the practice is in place and how many people are being required. I mean, I would, whatever Tony Piper says, Senator Olson, I would trust that. I wouldn't trust my assessment of what's happening currently.
Madam Chair, I just brought him up because he has been working out in rural Alaska in a somewhat similar capacity, and that's why I thought we'd ask him. But that's fine. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Again, reaching out to those online, Department of Corrections, Courts, Department of Law, Public Defender's Office. Any comments on Amendment Number 2? Mr. John Skidmore, Department of Law. Mr. Skidmore, if you could identify yourself for the record and then comments on Amendment Number 2.
Good morning, members of the committee. My name is John Skidmore. I'm the Director of the Criminal Division for the State of Alaska Department of Law. I did want to reiterate that the way this works is ASAP is a condition which can be imposed as a condition of probation by court, but it's not required to. Having practiced in the YK Delta in Bethel, having practiced in Bristol Bay and Dillingham, and having appeared in court hearings throughout the state, I can tell you that judges are familiar with what's available in their locations, and I don't think you would have someone that would be required to do ASAP if there was no treatment that was available to them. So I did want to reiterate that the way this amendment works is that it just allows people to use ASAP when it's available to them. It's not a requirement for them.
Senator Olson, follow-up?
Yeah, Mr. Skidmore, since you've been out there where the rubber hits the road, essentially, so you don't think that people are at a disadvantage if they come out from Chivac or someplace like Nunavak or something like that?
So through the chair, Senator Olson, I wouldn't say that there aren't challenges that are faced in rural communities where there's not as much treatment available. I certainly agree that that's something the state needs to work on. But
undue challenges?
I don't know how I define undue challenges. I would agree there are challenges. But the point that I was trying to make is that this amendment doesn't require them to go to the ASAP. All this is doing is it's allowing for there to be some monitoring. Without that monitoring, what we're left with currently under 91 is that people that are convicted of possession of narcotics anywhere in the state have no monitoring of that, and that doesn't really get to that treatment component, which was one of the underlying basis of what we're trying to do in SB 91 from last year.
No further questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Thank you, Mr. Skidmore. Any other comments, departments, divisions, State of Alaska online? I'll withdraw my objection to amendment number 2. Is there further objections to amendment number 2? If not, amendment number 2 is now adopted. Senator Dunleavy.
At ease.
Brief at ease. We're back on the record. Senator Dunleavy.
I move amendment number 3.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Madam Chair, I'd like to have our staff, Gina Rotaco, explain the amendment.
Gina, if you could identify yourself for the record, your affiliation, and then please proceed with comments on amendment number 3.
My name is Gina Rotaco, staff to Senator Mike Dunleavy. Amendment number 3 was requested by Office of Victims' Rights. There was some concern that for first-time DUI offenders who are not on electronic monitoring but are on house arrest, that the Commissioner of Corrections wouldn't be able to send them back to prison if they were violating their conditions of house arrest. And so this amendment just simply clarifies the language that the Commissioner has that authority to do so if he sees that there is a violation being committed.
Thank you. Are there questions from committee members for the sponsor of the amendment? Thank you, Gina. I'd like to ask, is there from the criminal division, public defenders, courts, corrections, parole, any comments that the committee should consider? Senator Von Imhoff.
I guess one of the questions is this a common occurrence, as do they have numbers on how many people violate their electronic monitoring? I'm just curious. I don't know who would.
We don't have those numbers.
Okay.
Brief at ease. We're back on the record. We've invited Commissioner Williams to the microphone. Commissioner Williams, if you could identify yourself for the record. Senator Von Imhoff, could you restate your question?
The question that I have is, do we have data that provides us the number of instances where prisoners may violate their electronic monitoring?
For the record, Dean Williams, the Commissioner of the Department of Corrections. This provision in law is really too new, through the chairs, Senator Imhoff. The provision is too new. We just don't have any data yet on violations of it. It's a new area of law that we at least haven't been able to analyze what the violators are, people on EM at home. So we just don't have it.
Senator Von Imhoff, follow up.
Have you met with the Office of Victims' Rights about this issue, and do you understand their perspective, and could you perhaps speak on that at all?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, this is actually it's a red-hot area for us right now because we're asking some of the same questions, too. What happens if there's a violation? What happens if something blows up when we're putting someone on home confinement of EM? And so we're concerned about all those things as well. The issue for us is the capacity of the department to respond to the issues and whether or not we are going to have to do it ourselves or do we get law enforcement. So we're very we're concerned about how that plays out and not having things go bad with someone on home on electronic monitoring, but it is a very intensive issue already in terms of like the putting someone on electronic monitoring. So it's been a source of debate in the department because it's a new area of law. We haven't had enough time passed to know what kind of problems we're going to have with the changes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Commissioner Williams, have you reviewed Amendment Number 3, and do you have an administration's position on Amendment Number 3?
Madam Chair, I don't really have a very strong position on it. I really get the sponsor of the amendment's intentions for and sort of clarifying that authority for the department to have it. So in that regard, I'm totally fine with that. The only concern I have is whether or not there's an implication that we're expected to respond and the capacity for us as a department to respond. I don't think that's the intent of the I don't want to speak for the sponsor. I think if the clarification, if the intention is to clarify that we have the authority to go get the person because they're doing something wrong while they're supposedly on home confinement, I am fine with the amendment. The only ancillary issue is whether or not there becomes a subtle expectation that we're going to be able to respond to all of these because it is a work-intensive issue that we hadn't ever had to face before.
Commissioner, on line number 6, it says the commissioner may return the prisoner to a correctional facility if the commissioner finds that the prisoner has violated the terms and conditions of imprisonment at the private sector.
Correct.
Under your discretion.
Correct, it is. And I recognize that discretionary language. I just wanted to add for the record that was one of our concerns. But I understand the discretion. It's a may, and that's everything.
Senator Majicki.
Thank you. I appreciate the sort of philosophy of the amendment, but if someone violates conditions of release or imprisonment, is this not authority you already possess?
Through the chair, Senator Majicki, some in my department and some in law have said, in fact, we do. There has been debate on the other side. In fact, I've been one to try to. This has been in debate. We haven't had a test cased. We haven't had this sort of scenario tested yet. But some in law, I think, do agree with that scenario, that analysis, rather.
Senator Dunleavy.
Again, it's just clarifying language in discussions with the Office of Victim Rights that allow just makes it clear that the commissioner has this authority.
Thank you. Further questions on Amendment Number 3? Commissioner Williams, thank you. Again, I'll reach out to the departments, corrections, Department of Correction, the court system, criminal division, public defenders, Department of Law. We have all in the audience, or the administration itself is represented today. Division of Parole. Senator Majicki.
I actually just have a question. I'm generally pretty good with this sort of thing, but is the Department of Law or someone on board that can explain to me what it means when a prisoner does not have a liberty interest in that status?
Mr. Skidmore, if you could identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, members of the committee. My name is John Skidmore. I'm the Director of the Criminal Division for the State of Alaska Department of Law. I believe the issue that is looked at in the amendment here, and when it talks about having a liberty interest, the liberty interest, I think this comes into sharpest focus for first-time DUIs. So you have someone that under current law for first-time DUI says they're to serve those 3 days at home. Because it doesn't say this person's going to go to jail, it says they're supposed to go to do EM and residential. The argument that's been presented is that then if the person doesn't comply with conditions on EM while at the residence, that because the initial sanction didn't say that they weren't going to go to jail, said they were going to serve it at home, the argument is that the person can't be returned to jail at all. The liberty interest is whether or not you're at jail or not. And so what this is trying to clarify is that the commissioner and the Department of Corrections would actually have the ability for someone who says, you know, I'm not doing EM, I'm not following your rules, I don't care, you can't do anything to me. The response is, well, actually, we can. That's what I think it's trying to clarify.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Skidmore. Director Skidmore, thank you. Mr. Schilling, does the sponsor have a position on amendment number 3?
Madam Chair, Senator Coghill does not oppose this amendment. It makes sense to clarify the Department of Corrections authority to bring an individual who's violating the conditions of their residential placement to be pulled back into a DOC facility.
Thank you. With that, I'll withdraw my objection to amendment number 3. Is there further objection to adoption of amendment number 3? Seeing and hearing none, amendment number 3 is adopted. We have another amendment that is in process. I plan on bringing a CS before the committee on Monday on Senate Bill number 54. Senator Hoffman, could you talk to the committee while we have all the departments in the room so that we can at least have a preliminary discussion on your thoughts for an additional amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. During the rollout of the bill yesterday, I had quite extensive dialogue at this table, and the commission had similar discussions and deliberations regarding the 0 to 90 day presumptive jail range, and the change that was made initially to 0 to 120 that was considered by the Senate Judiciary Committee. It was initially adopted, and then the Department of Law came in and made some recommendations to increase that range from 0 to 1 year. So the amendment that I am contemplating is to address this range. There are some problems with the range of 0 to 120 that I'm considering, and I had discussions with Mr. Skidmore regarding those, and we're trying to get those addressed, and hopefully we can get that language resolved and brought before the committee by Monday.
Mr. Schilling, does the sponsor have any comments on the amendment that Senator Hoffman is contemplating?
Yes, Madam Chair, Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill. I spoke to Senator Coghill just prior to this meeting, and he reiterated that he supports the change to 120. The presumptive range would be 0 to 120, providing for suspended imprisonment up to 18 months. Of course, the maximum sentence for a C felony without any priors would still be 5 years with aggravators, and Senator Coghill supports that change.
Would any of the departments, corrections, courts, law, like to comment on that proposal for consideration? Seeing and hearing none, Senator Hoffman will work over the weekend to see if he wants to offer that amendment to the committee. It's my intention to bring the CS before you. The amendments will be incorporated in. Legal has the ability to change technical issues, so all amendments that are inserted may create new sections as far as the change goes in the CS. We believe that there's no change for fiscal notes at this time. Just wanted to put that on the record. Is there anything else on Senate Bill 54 to come before the committee before we set it aside? Senator Dunleavy.
Mr. Chair, only one amendment?
Yes, Senator. Okay.
Thank you.
Senator Von Imhoff.
We will have a chance to discuss that amendment on Monday. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schilling. We talked about SB 97 and the change of title to become a Senate Finance Committee bill. I just wanted to say that that is the pension obligation bond, lowering the limit from $5 billion to $2.5 billion and providing a mechanism for the legislature to be informed of the administration's intent to advance a conversation about pension obligation bonds. For the public who may not have followed yesterday's conversation, it has to do with the unfunded liability in Alaska's pension systems and reducing the ability to use arbitrage, I hope I'm defining that appropriately, as a means to close that fiscal gap. So that title change, I'll be offering an amendment for the sponsorship change on the floor later today. Amendments for Senate Bill 97 are due by 5 o'clock tonight. A reminder that this afternoon's meeting has been canceled, as well as Saturday's meeting, and that on Monday we will have SB 54 before us, and it is our hope to move that bill from committee on Monday. The operating budget is on a Monday's agenda as well. Can we close it? We're adjourned.